Welcome to Body Sculpt of New York, 6 weeks to fitness podcast, where we hope to inform, motivate, encourage, and inspire you towards living a healthier lifestyle. And now, here's your host, the president of Body Sculpt of New York, Vince Ferguson.
Hi, I'm Vince Ferguson. Welcome to 6 Weeks to Fitness, episode number 76. Thank you so much for tuning in. Adam Davenport was born and raised in the south suburbs of Chicago, Illinois. At age 15, Davenport wrote a short story titled Home, which was published in the anthology Looking Inward, for which he was presented with an award of achievement by former President George Bush Sr. in 1999. In the spring of 2003, he created the production company Bulldog Productions in response to the lack of filmmaking opportunities at Yale. Davenport's short film Midnight Sun in 2007, which he made as his thesis project while an undergraduate at Yale University, became the recipient of the PandaVision New Filmmaker Award, a distinction shared by the first films of Steven Soderbergh and Paul Thomas Anderson. Made when he was 21 years old, the project was photographed by Clint Eastwood's cinematographer, Tom Stern, and starred Academy Award winner Melissa Leo, Jack Mulcahy, and Tony nominee David Harbour. Davenport has worked with 6 Academy Award nominees and 2 Tony nominees, and is the youngest director in the Actors Studio. He has been cast to play Hercules in the upcoming indie production Project Olympus, a feature-length rock musical. I am pleased to have Adam Davenport on our 6 Weeks of Fitness podcast. Adam, how are you?
Hey, Vincent, how are you? Pleasure to speak to you.
It's my pleasure having you on, man. Can't wait to get into this. But before we talk about Hercules, one of my role models growing up, tell us a little bit about you. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in the south suburbs of Chicago, a little town called Park Forest. And I was there for 18 years, and I went off. They shipped me off to Yale. Well, it wasn't quite that easy. I always sort of had a dream of going to Yale, and so it's the only school I applied to. Early decision. They took me. I did my time there, and after 7 years in LA, I'm now living in New York City.
Ah, great, great. But were you active as a child growing up in Chicago?
No, I was actually kind of a nerd, actually. My active lifestyle has really been more recent as an adult. But as a kid, I played a lot of video games. I probably read a book every day. I was a complete nerd. played soccer, but I was. Okay. I joke with people that I was the best bench warmer ever. I didn't get very many minutes on the field. I was kind of gangly kid. I was really, tall and super lean and wasn't yet comfortable with my own body. And I think, the gyms made me a lot more comfortable with my body. This was my more, I guess you could call it a transformation that I've made in the last 3 years. But no, childhood, I definitely stayed in whenever possible.
Hmm. Really? Now, that's interesting because someone who now is in the spotlight and going to be so for the rest of your life, to hear that you were kind of like an introvert as a child, that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, I think it just goes to show you that we, as human beings, we can really realize anything that we put our minds to. And I think as a kid, I didn't have the confidence to explore the physical or active side of myself. So that's something that came much later. And, with that came, its own kind of self-confidence.
Yes, yes. I definitely want to talk about that. Now, who were your role models growing up? Did you have any?
Oh, so many role models. I could draw from all over the place. There was,
really?
Toni Morrison. I was fascinated with anything that she ever wrote. My favorite novel growing up was Song of Solomon. And, yes. I always had a vivid and active imagination. I also always sort of fancied the creative arts and the entertainment industry. So I admired people like George Lucas, Steven Spielberg, Meryl Streep.
Right. Yes.
Within the African American community, Denzel Washington, Alfre Woodard, Halle Berry. Those were kind of people that I idolized growing up. And it's kind of amazing how, more recently as an adult, some of my icons or idols I've now come to collaborate with. I've worked with Alfre Woodard a couple of times, and that's been just like a dream come true. What, something like the younger self, what I believe, would I be working with her one day? I don't know that I would have believed that as a little kid. So
you mentioned quite a few names from the, whether they're from stage or whether they're actors or writers. Who affected you the most out of all these people you mentioned? Who made the most significant impact in your life?
Biggest impact in my life. I'd actually say in the last 10 years, I've become very close with Melissa Leo. She was in my thesis film, as you mentioned in the intro. And yes. My last decade of my life, she really kind of took a role of a surrogate parent in my life. When I lived in LA, my first 3 years, I was living in a house with her. She brought me to the Academy Awards both times that she was nominated. And I think a lot of issues that I had with myself about self-love and doubt and, because as artists or creative people, I think human beings in general, we all have dreams, right? But some of them, because of limited opportunities or resources, they're too scary. You know, that's the one thing we have to deal with is our fear. That gets in the way of us, realizing our full potential. And I think Melissa really helped me conquer my own demons. And she kind of saw, I guess, for lack of a better word, my own potential and just helped me deal with, very patiently deal with my own issues so that, I look at myself now as a 32-year-old and I'm very much a different man than I was 5 years ago, or certainly than 10 years ago. And definitely there are the threads of commonality that will always be Adam. But, definitely 10 years ago, I wasn't as confident. I wasn't as secure in myself. I think she played a huge vital role in that and just going after the things I want. And being specific and honest too.
Yes. Honest in what sense?
Oh, I think a lot of people, honesty means there's a couple, the way I look at honesty, it's like a matter of personal integrity, right? So, a lot of people are dishonest, but largely with themselves, So it's like if you're going, waking up every day and going to a job that you don't care about, that is not what you want to be doing with your life, that's a form of dishonesty because you're being inauthentic to your true self. So, there was a time in LA just for survival jobs, I did these things that were not in the industry, being an assistant or for like a general contractor. For 2 years, I was a store manager at Abercrombie and Fitch. And although those were things that definitely paid me well, 9 to 5, and had a full-time salary with benefits, it was me in one way settling, because it's not how I saw myself. It was just settling into like some sort of comfort zone, because everyone wants a steady paycheck, right? And but I think it's when you take those risks, that's where the rewards are. So that's I kind of see honesty is a huge part of the journey to success, because if you're inauthentic or dishonest, you'll never get what you want.
That's true. But now, and I hear what you're saying, and it really resonates with me, because I know so many people who do settle. But how do you get the courage to step out?
Oh, man. Well, I mean, for me, I'm 32, and it's taken... it's taken 3 decades of life experience, and I think probably actively the last decade. I went to Yale University with the intention of working in an entertainment industry, and I think it's now taken 10. Now at this moment, in 2016, really the last year of my life in New York City, things started to move forward in the way that I might have idealized, you know, in
yes.
years past. I think what it takes is, for one, you have to make a plan, and
yes.
you have to make consistent small steps towards that plan every day. You have to be consistent, and you have to, because, you know, not every day is going to have a result, but, and there'll be days where you fail, but I think that failure is part of the path to greatness. There's that quote by Michael Jordan that I'm not going to paraphrase, but where he addresses that, you know, to win, you have to fail many, many, many times. So,
right.
I think
right.
it's accepting that, and accepting whether you want to be an actor, or whether you want to be a bodybuilder, whether you want to be president. You know, there's an inordinate amount of hours that goes into the discipline of being the best at what you want to do. I think there's that Malcolm Gladwell wrote that book about,
yes.
he basically had that theory that 10,000 hours
yes,
is required
hours.
To mastery. So you got to put in the work. I think a lot of people are scared or lazy, or they create excuses for not doing the work. So you have to do the work, and also do the work without expectation. That's something I've really had to, that's a big lesson I had to learn, because I've always worked hard, but I think I always had expectation attached to it. Let's say I went into an audition and I worked on it for 5 or 6 hours, and then the part didn't go my way. Then I would have resentment in my heart because it didn't go the way I expected. But
right.
life's taught me that always, if you just show up and you have gratitude rather than expectation, that's when the surprises happen. So.
Yeah. Yes, very powerful. And you're actually living your dreams now, correct?
Yeah, I mean, every day, you know, every day is. I still tell people the struggle is real. You know, I woke up today. I had a callback and 2 other auditions, and you know, on top of, you know, and now I'm going to go to the gym after I speak with you. And so,
okay.
but by no means, and I'm living in a very, you know, modest room that I'm renting from a friend in Brooklyn. So, you know, it's all, I'm paying my dues. I mean, I don't want to delude anyone. I'm not living in the Hollywood Hills. I'm not driving a luxury car. I don't even know that those things matter to me in terms of what I want for myself. Mm. But I'm definitely living the dream of just being a working artist. And yeah, that's something I created for myself in just the last year. And it was only by stepping out of my comfort zone that I finally did that.
Yes, I see. How important is visualization to you?
Oh, visualization is huge. I actually do a lot of my visualization at the gym. That's kind of how I use that
yes.
idle time, you know, because once you know the routines and the exercises, bodybuilding in the gym can get monotonous or boring, you know, the repetitive nature of it. So I have to keep my mind engaged another way. So the
yes.
way I've done that, I usually do a lot of my planning and visualizing of other aspects of my life while I'm at the gym. So that's, I think that's crucial. And not only do I have a better workout,
right.
but I kind of come out of it, and then I go home and take action on the things I do.
Mm. Oh, yeah, that's another key word, action. How important is action?
Oh, well, that's the next step. So you visualize, and then you take action. Because, I mean, people can dream all day, but it doesn't
yes.
make them any damn good if they don't, you know, do something about it. So I think that's where the whole adage of just do it, you know, you learn by doing. And, you know, the first time it's not going to be necessarily perfect. You're not going to have a perfect batting average. Even look at the great golfers or right. you know, baseball players, look at what their average, if you're, you know, basically a 30-40% average is pretty high
right.
in professional
right.
sports, you know? So
yes.
some people, it's kind of unrealistic that people expect in life that they're going to, you know, execute at a 100 or 90% success rate. You're doing pretty well if you're at 30-40%, just like the athletes.
Yes, very true, very true. if you think otherwise, if you put that much pressure on yourself, you're only setting yourself up to fail.
Oh, right? Yeah, it's the worst thing you do. We're judged enough as it is. So, you know, the last person who should be doing judgment is you on yourself. You know, just takes you out of a zone of free, of being free to actually focus and deliver if you're attached to the results of it. So, yeah, but that's something I've had to learn just through life. If you'd asked me this question 4 years ago, I don't know that I would have been able to answer it.
We're constantly evolving.
We're constantly evolving and learning, and I think that's how I've come to accept life. It's just like a lesson. Life is a great teacher. So as long as you show up and you're ready to available to it, I think, you know, otherwise you're just kind of going through it with blinders on and, you know.
Yeah, no, I get it. You know, but let me ask you a question about Yale for a minute. I know you attended Yale University, but what was that experience like? You know, being an African American, and I believe you majored in theater, film.
I was a film major. I started out as a drama major. How was it? Yeah, I mean, it was difficult. I think culturally and socially, it's a very although they, you know, they try to be, the campus is diverse in certain ways in terms of their student body and who they admit. I think it still has a very old school New England white boy culture, you know.
Yes.
And that's come to light more recently, I think, in the news over the last 18 months.
Okay, yes.
On that campus. But, you know, were there times that I felt discriminated against or felt like opportunities weren't afforded to me because of my race? Absolutely. But, I mean, that's just the world that we live in. So I think, you know, that was being at Yale in some ways was a microcosm for me of seeing what the world is like at large and, you know, privilege and entitlement. And I didn't come from a legacy like some other, you know, people do on those campuses. So, you know, I had to do everything, you know, differently. So, you know, that meant not, you know, having some of the privileges of other students there. And, you know, still I'm grateful for that degree. And I think coming out of it, it's opened up enough doors for me. But so I, you know, at the end of the day, I would largely only have positive things to say about, you know, having an opportunity to go in Ivy League, you know, school. So I still got the education, but I also I also got the experience. If that makes sense.
Oh, it does make sense. And it's amazing, man. But now you are also the youngest director in the Actors Studio. But when did you begin directing?
Yes. Well, directing, I started doing actually at Yale. So after I switched from the theater program into film, I was just making short films on campus. And I was hiring SAG actors to be in my shorts. Like, I think I made my first film when I was 19. I like hired New York actors, professional crew, and it was 40 minutes long. And you know, I just kept, and then I directed a play. My first play that I directed was The Lion in Winter. And same thing. I got professional equity actors and brought them on the campus, and the university wouldn't let me use an actual campus like theater because I wasn't using you know, student actors. So I rented a space. I just treated it. I've always been entrepreneurial, so I just rented they had this building called the African American Cultural House. So they had a auditorium there. So I rented the auditorium, like put in 200 chairs. And I'd put up a play, you know, and I charged tickets, and I made my money back. So, you know, nice. I just continued that from Yale. And then my thesis film was 20 minutes long, and that was an amazing experience working with Tom Stern, who's Clint Eastwood's cinematographer. It was everything I learned about the camera, I really learned from him, and just how to be develop that eye that a director needs. So I took that with me to LA, and I'm acting right now, but I think my long-term interest really is directing. I think I'm just trying to create a career for myself that, 10, 15 years from now, I can be making films, not unlike what Denzel did or Ben Affleck. I tried directing in my 20s, and the biggest issue has always been just getting the financing. So I'm going about this a different way now, just by, creating exposure for myself through acting work. And, we'll see. We'll just continue on that journey and one foot in front of the next. But no, I love directing. I love working with actors. And at the suggestion of Melissa Leo, she suggested that I interview with the Actors Studio. So when I was 27, I made an application and had a final interview with Martin Landau. And nice. A few days later, they let me in. So I've directed a couple of stage readings of new plays at the studio, and that's kind of how I've had the opportunity to work with really amazing actors, from Francis Fisher to, just doing readings on my own. I've worked with Sally Kirkland a number of times, Alfred Woodard,
yes.
Lawrence Fishburne. So, I really love the idea of one day being an actor's director. So I think also just this thing I'm doing now of the acting work will give me so many precious hours of experience that when I do have the opportunity to be on my own set, I'll have that vocabulary to talk to my actors. Because I can't tell you as an actor myself how frustrating it is to be on set with a director that doesn't know how to talk to you. Or to give you a piece of direction like, that's not helpful. Like, can you do that purple, things, and you're like figuring out what does that mean?
Yeah, exactly. Really? It must be confusing.
Yeah.
I hear that. Wow, man. But this has really been interesting, and I'm not even halfway done yet, but I'm not going to hold you for so long, but I need to talk about Hercules. Tell my audience about Hercules, about that, about Project Olympus.
Yeah, well, I saw they were casting for this feature film about the Greek gods, and
yes.
it was a musical, and I also sing, so I sent
nice.
the initial audition was a self-tape, so I sent my self-tape in. I sang Nights in White Satin, the Moody Blues, and then they sang a little bit of John Lennon, Imagine. I sent that in, and then the casting director, Eve Pomerantz, said we'd like you to come in and have an appointment with the director. And so they gave me material from the film. The whole film sung, so it was another song to sing. So I came in, that day I wasn't really in great vocal health because shortly thereafter, for like 2 weeks, I was very, very sick. There was like this flu going around New York City, and I don't know. It really affected my ability to just sing or even talk. So it was like the first couple of days that I was down with this thing. And it's like, okay, well, I'm going to still go to this audition and, do the best that I can. And, I kind of recognize that if you're not feeling well or in good vocal health, you're going to have limitations to what you can do vocally. But I decided I'm just going to go in, have a lot of presence, and
right.
Make it more about the acting than the singing. So there are a couple of interludes in the song where there's musical breaks where you're just kind of, it's those weird moments like when the actor's there on stage, and if it hasn't been staged yet, you're kind of wondering what you're going to do during
right.
that dead space. So I just started improvising. And I just started talking because I wanted Hercules. So I just started talking as if I was Hercules, and I went into this ad lib about you know, have you met my father Zeus, and how embarrassed I was that he's always sleeping with all these, you know, people on Earth, and, you know, I have all these probably half brothers that I've never even met before. And
yes.
I don't know. So that's what I did. And then I left, and, you know, a few weeks later, the casting director emailed me and asked if I was available, and they offered me the role. So I guess apparently they had auditioned 500 people for that part, looked at 500 people for that role. So
is that right?
Yeah. So
500 people.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. Were they all African-American?
No, all mixed, all different. Yeah, the whole cast is very diverse. There's, you know, one of the actors that they cast to play Ares, the god of war, he's Middle Eastern. His name's Eden, and Eden Zane. And, yeah, they're very diverse. The actor they cast to play my father, Zeus, is a white actor, Maxwell Korn. So, yeah, I think what's interesting about this film is that he takes the Greek gods, the mythology, but he sets it in, it's kind of like Greek gods meet Star Wars. So we're in, the costumes are crazy, man. We're in, you know, space outfits, and, it's a rock opera, so it could be like Tommy or Pink Floyd, Dark Side of the Moon. So the director has a very vivid imagination. So, you know, we'll see. I'm eager to see how it all turns out, and, you know, honored that he chose me to, you know, serve his vision. So.
Yes. Yes. But do you feel like it's special because like you're basically one of the first African-Americans to play that role in film?
Well, that's something we'll let the critics debate about. I know Dwayne Johnson played Hercules, but technically his mother is Samoan and his father is a black Canadian. So,
right.
You know, both of my parents are from here, and, you know, I don't know. So I don't know. Am I the first African American Hercules, or is it Dwayne Johnson, or is he disqualified? Cause he's Samoan Canadian. Like, you know, that's where it gets into that whole murky zone of race, but
yes.
You know, I definitely am one of the first, so
right.
I mean that feels important. I hope I did a good job, because that seems like a big burden to carry.
It is. It is. But look, my thing is, does it really matter if you're African American or not playing that role, right?
Yeah.
That's the importance of it. That's what's so cool about it. But the fact that you are is even better, because it just shows that there's no doors that can't be opened.
Yeah, it does. I think Hollywood is becoming more sensitive to diversity. I think the Oscars so white backlash of this year really opened up a lot of eyes, and the Academy already has rectified that by their most recent admission. And they admitted, I think, 637 new members in the last month. And I think like half of them, or 42% of them, were women and people of color. So that there's definitely progress. And you look at the Tony Awards this year, and Hamilton, and all the lead actors in the musical categories were African American. So, you know, I think it's definite progress over 10 years ago, for sure. Because I know that when I was growing up on the TV, there were far less role models available than there are now. And when I was a kid, you basically had Denzel, Halle, and Morgan Freeman, you know, and Will Smith. But now, you have so many people of color, you know, carrying television shows. Viola Davis, Aziz Ansari, Taraji Henson. Yes. I mean, it's unprecedented, really. So I think it's a really exciting time to be an artist. So
yes, and you know, it takes time. It doesn't happen overnight.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
And that's the thing. We have to be patient and move forward. Just keep one step in front of the other, like you said. I think that's so important. You know, really. Now, you mentioned earlier that production just wrapped up.
Yeah, we wrapped last Tuesday.
Really?
I only had 3 days of work because we shot the whole thing on green screen. They shot the whole movie in 18 days.
Is that right?
Yeah,
because
they shot the whole movie on green screen. Shot all of, I had five scenes, and they shot all of my five scenes in 3 days. So we worked very quickly. And but it was intense because when I got the offer, I only had like 3 weeks to prepare, and I was a little I don't want to say flustered, but I was a little concerned initially about, you know, getting into the doing the physical prep I needed to do to, you know, be on camera. I mean, I'm always, you know, going to the gym six times a week, but Dwayne Johnson had 6 months to prepare for Hercules. So in my mind, I said, well, I'm definitely not going to be able to compete with that because, you know, he's 240 pounds. And, you know, at the most I've ever have weighed is 195 or 200 pounds. Right now, right now I'm, you know, around 185 because my agents, you can get too big for acting work unless you're, you know, unless you are Dwayne Johnson or one of those big bodybuilder guys, and that's really not me. I'm so I think this size where I'm at, 185, you know, tight and lean is where I'm looking to keep it. But yeah, when I got the offer, it was intense because I was also doing an off-Broadway play at the Bearer Group, and I just got an offer for another play. At the New Ohio Theater. So basically when they worked it out, they scheduled it out so that I could do everything. But last month I was doing the film, getting ready to do the film, and I was doing basically both plays at the same time. I went from one play into the next.
Is that kind of difficult, though, to know your lines for a play as you're filming a movie? That's got to be the hardest thing to do.
Well, I just... You know, on the subway, I talk to myself like I'm a crazy person. I just read my lines to myself. I live an hour away from Manhattan in Brooklyn. So with my hour commute every day, that's usually how I use my time. I have my pages with my lines, and I'm either writing them down like it's homework, to commit it to memory, or I'm talking to myself. Running lines. So the nice thing about that is no one sits next to me on the subway ever. So
yeah, I imagine so. A lot of privacy, my man, a lot of privacy. That's interesting. But now you talked also about exercise, and you know, my podcast, we focus on health and fitness, and let's talk about that. You said you work out 6 days a week.
Yeah, I work out 5 to 6 days a week. For me, because I have such a high metabolism, I like to do something every day that keeps my body in an anabolic state, because I wasn't born to carry 180, 185 pounds. For most of my life, I was much less, 145 to 150. So for me, if I spend too long a period of time away from the gym, not only do I not have that, you know, endorphin rush that I kind of thrive on during my day, but I do feel like I do start to shrink in terms of body mass. So there's not a specific time when I go, because it depends. My schedule is really erratic. The most important thing is as long as I go, and even if I only have, you know, there's days where I do like a crazy 2 hour workout. There might be days. Yesterday I only worked out half an hour because that's the only time that I had, but I make sure that when I do go, that I make it count. So I'm not going to be on Instagram or on my phone texting, you know, I could go in there with a specific focus for what I'm going to do and hit it hard and then, go home and make a recovery shake. So,
love it.
And I think that's really been a huge part of how I've been able to gain 40, 45 pounds over the course of 3 years and maintain it. It's just being consistent. You know,
Yes.
if I wanted to be a pro bodybuilder, I could definitely do that with my body. But I think I tested that last year when I got to almost 200 pounds. But that's not really a look that I want to, you know, just do for my own image as an actor. So, you know,
Yes.
I have found the right balance of what works for me. So,
and that's important. Now, your workouts consist primarily of weight training, correct? And some cardio.
Yeah, weight training. I don't really do much cardio at all. It's really just, you know, weights and abs and, you know, a lot of just watching what I eat. You know, if I have a shoot, I might then throw in some running. When I did a commercial for Ab Coaster last month, that's going to come out this fall. I'm going to be the new Ab Coaster guy.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
But I wanted, you know, my abs to be, you know, I was like, well, I'm being hired to sell a product for abs. My abs better be pretty amazing. So I would then use the treadmill for, you know, 25 minutes before a lift, or after as a cool down. But normally I don't do that, because otherwise it's hard. Right now I'm just trying to keep at a certain level of muscularity, and right now I'm probably gonna go up again, like put on 3 or 4 pounds of lean muscle by the end of the summer. So, and I think also just with having an active lifestyle in New York City and walking 2 to 3 miles a day between, you know, walking around to auditions and on the subway, I'm walking, you know, 3 miles a day anyways.
Wow.
So,
wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. Now, how important is nutrition to you, Adam?
Oh, nutrition is key. That, you know, as they say, abs, like for one, abs are made in the kitchen.
Yes,
and I really have learned so much just about my body and through nutrition, how, I mean, it affects everything, your mood and energy. And
yes.
So,
yes.
You know, I've really have transformed. When I lived in LA, when I first moved to LA in 2007, I would eat, you know, complete junk garbage food. I wouldn't put it past me, you know, to go to, you know, after going to the bar with friends, to go to McDonald's or whatnot. But I've made a couple of big changes in terms of what I intake. You know, I more or less do not consume alcohol at all anymore, because I realize that,
nice,
you know,
nice.
Alcohol is like the big muscle killer. And, it, you know, it's... it's just giving your body an obstacle in terms of fitness goals if you're throwing that on top of stuff. So, you know, I live a alcohol-free, drug-free lifestyle, and, you know, generally I kind of, you know, balance my carbs and fat intake, but I'm always, you know, trying to get as much protein in as I can, because that, you know, if you're basically getting 200 grams of protein a day, you're having to eat almost, you know, small meals every 2 to 3 hours. So I bring a Magic Bullet mini blender with me in my book bag everywhere I go. And I've got like the protein, a little portable protein tub. So every 2 to 3 hours I, you know, take out a scoop and I make
nice.
A shake or I'll have like, I have almonds in my book bag right now too. Or so,
wow.
You know, for
Ooh.
Me, the big thing is, because I'm very different, for example, for let's say from like my mother and my brother who are overweight. So like their
oh.
the advice I would give them is different than for my own body, which is very, I guess I'm an ectomorph, as they say, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So I'm just trying to get as many calories as I can, because I burn through them really quickly. So anytime I'm trying to put on mass, for example, I definitely try to get, you know, between 3,500 and 4,000 calories, which is hard when you have a really active lifestyle.
Sure,
you know, on a
yes.
on an average day, on a day where I haven't done very good with the food, you know, I might have just had 2,500 calories. But yeah, I try to pay attention to that as much as I can.
Excellent, excellent. Now, I have a couple more questions before I let you go. And I'm so happy that you have the time to, you know, share some of your wisdom with my audience, man, because this has really been really great and uplifting. What have been some of your greatest challenges, Adam, and how did you overcome them?
My greatest challenges, for one, I would say self-esteem, confidence. I think when I was young, I was not a very confident person because I was teased for being skinny. I was teased, having acne as a kid, not being perceived that as attractive. So, that affects your self-worth. So
yes.
I definitely, gained that through the gym, for one. And
right.
I think also it made me very much more focused. I think when I was younger, I tended to be a distracted person, as a lot of people can be. You know, we, as human beings, we create distractions, and I had my own. So I think I've definitely, once I learned how to remove my own distractions, it created that much more time in my life for abundance.
Abundance. Wow.
Yeah, and to just do what I want to be doing. Because if you're doing what you want to be doing with your life, usually the people who are really successful they're not leading distracted lives.
More focused. You're saying they're more
extremely focused. Extremely
focused
and just with purpose. So, they're not sitting around smoking weed playing Xbox.
Yeah. Yeah. True. I know I'm not.
So, I think that's an obstacle I've moved past. And, self-acceptance, I would say. And, the obstacle of transitioning into being a working, artist, working actor. For the last 10 months since September, I've been paying my bills solely from acting and modeling work.
Now that's beautiful. Doing what you love to do and getting paid for it and being able to sustain yourself off the work that you do.
Yeah, getting paid for it. I mean, I'm not making six figures yet. It's still a working class income.
Yes.
Some months are better than others. I definitely each month I see progress. And so it just, it's encouraging and gratifying to me and reminds me firsthand to just stay in it.
Yes, most definitely. Now, what action steps would you recommend to our listeners in terms of fulfilling their dreams? What do you recommend people do?
Action steps. Well, I would say make a plan, whether it's a dream. So whether it's a dream of, a goal of losing weight or gaining weight or recording an album, I think for one is be clear with what you want. Because if you don't know what you want, then it's really hard to visualize what the plan is and how you're going to get there. So first know what you want, then visualize it, make a plan, break that plan into digestible steps that can be broken down like by day by day, by month, by year. And I think having realistic expectations because, with the things we want, they're not going to happen overnight. They're not going to happen within a month. So, once you give yourself, and creating like also mini goals for yourself. So once you have that and you could break it down, it makes that all that much more manageable. So, for myself, I'm not expecting after 1 year of being a working actor, I'm not expecting to be a series regular on HBO. That's not part of the plan for this year.
Right.
So you just break it down, and it's just a journey. So you can't get to the top of the Himalayas and just by skipping up there. So,
Yeah, it takes time and it takes some clarity on your part, right?
Mm-hmm.
Be clear.
And also, don't be afraid to ask for help. Don't be afraid to ask questions, because there's fine people that are making progress in that field or have already made their success. Find mentors. You know, I have a lot of mentors. I'll be thanking a lot of people for helping me along my path. But at the same time, I had to do the work. There's a fine line, because no one can create the results for you but yourself. But you can equally at the same time be humble enough to acknowledge what you don't know. And with the things that you don't know, do your research, do your homework, and find out what you need to do to succeed.
Oh, very good advice. Now, you can always be a public speaker in your spare time. You know that, right?
I've never thought of that.
Well, think about it. You're good. You're very good.
Thank you. You could be my agent then. You could be my booking agent.
Only for public speaking, though, not for your acting.
No, for public speaking.
Okay.
I'll commission you 20%. How about that?
Oh, my. 20%. I'm in.
No, 20%.
That's pretty good. No, I'm in. 20%. That's pretty good. I like that. But, Adam, what is on your bucket list?
Ooh, bucket list. Okay, well, for this year, I would say I just want to find more interesting work on the stage and to do. I've done now in the past year 5 plays. So I think the next benchmark for me would be I've now done an off-Broadway play, I think. I would ultimately love to work on Broadway, but that's not in my sights for the next year. So I think I just want to continue doing interesting, good work on the New York stage. And, I do not have my equity card yet. That's the union, the actors union for stage actors.
Right.
So yeah, maybe in the next year, someone will give me my equity card. That would be a nice benchmark. As far as film and TV, I've had a couple of speaking roles now, and Hercules, that was a supporting lead in an indie film. So I'd like to do more independent film work and just see where that takes me. I think I'm just down to continue working really hard and working with other people that work at a high level and just see where that goes. I think that's the best I can hope for.
How can we follow you on social media?
Oh, sure. I'm very active on social media, on Instagram. My handle is Adam Davenport NYC. On Facebook, you can look for Adam Davenport. You'll find me. It won't be very take you very long. And then I do have a Twitter, but I'm not really active on it. Do people still use Twitter? I feel like it's become I feel like it's become all corporate. Like the businesses will tweet stuff and politicians will tweet stuff. It's big on if you're a public figure. So I have one, but I'm much more engaged on Instagram and Facebook. Look for me there.
Okay. Most definitely. What gym do you work out of?
I belong to Crunch and Planet Fitness.
Oh, really? Which Crunch, may I ask?
With both of those memberships, they're good at any location.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Cool.
So I've been going to the Planet Fitness in Brooklyn. There's one literally a block away from my house that's open 24 hours. So that's why I like that one. And it's also, it feels like a neighborhood gym. It's not a scene. Some of the Manhattan gyms, I feel like I'm going to the club or something.
Yeah, I know.
And I don't have any good gossip to dish out, so don't talk to me. But that sounded really cynical, but I'm just having fun. But no, if I do go to Crunch, I actually do like Crunch because they have more things. Planet Fitness, the arrangement is just very basic.
Yes.
There's some things that they don't have there that I have to go to Crunch for. They don't really have many machines for calves or
right.
just leg stuff in general, or it's harder. And it's also very hard to get a bench there because there's only three benches and two Smiths. So, I used to go a lot to the Crunch on 54th Street in Midtown.
Okay.
And that one's
right.
very big.
Yes, I know that one.
So.
Yes. Okay. But dual membership, so it's where you have your choice of where you want to go, you know, which is good.
Yeah.
Which is very good. You know, but let me just say, Adam, that on behalf of Body Scope of New York, that's my not-for-profit health and fitness organization, and 6 Weeks to Fitness, I want to thank you for coming on our show.
Oh, thank you so much. My pleasure. I think we both learned some stuff today.
Yeah, I think so, man. I appreciate you, man, and I hope to check you out. But before we go, did you say when the movie is going to be released?
Oh, I have no idea. I think Project Olympus will be released sometime next year in 2017. I know that Alex is planning to have a cut by the fall, but then there's a lot of special effects and CGI work they're going to do, and they have to record the tracks with the live orchestra. When we sang our songs, they were just two demo tracks. So I expect it will be sometime late next year. You know, they never tell us actors that when we're there. They want us to just say our lines.
Yeah. Just do as you're told.
But, you know, of course, the moment I have an idea, I will let you know. And I hope by that time I've booked a couple of other movies too. So, you know, keep it thriving.
Oh, good, good. And I'd love to have you back on to talk about your upcoming movies as well.
Absolutely.
Really? So I truly hope this program was informative, encouraging, and inspiring, and that you will continue tuning in to our 6 Weeks of Fitness podcast. And if you have any questions or comments, please leave them on my 6 Weeks of Fitness blog at www.6weeksoffitness.com or email me at vince@6weeks.com. Take care. Bye-bye.